Have you ever wanted to learn a new language, but just didn't have the time or money? I may have a solution for you. Her name is Jessica, and she gives free Chinese lessons daily at 11 p.m. Beijing time and 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Chinese is fun and easy if you have the right teacher. Let Jessica be that teacher and introduce yourself to the fastest growing language in the international job market today at tinyurl.com/tcjessica and tell her Ian sent you.
Do you like fine art but think it might be out of your price range? Do you have a vision for a painting that you'd like to see brought to life but you just don't have the skill? I might have a solution for you. Art by Daisy. With decades of experience, Daisy offers high-quality, affordable watercolor paintings suitable for hanging in your home, office, or even as a gift. With prices starting at just $55, visit tinyurl.com/artbydaisy to find out more. Hello and welcome to the DevCast. I am your host, author, and journalist Ian Tott, and I'd like to thank you for joining me as we prepare to take our first look at the crimes of Leonard Lake and Charles Ng. Before we get into it, as always, I have the normal show notes. If you would like to follow me on social media, just search for the DeathCast, DeathCast Pod, or DeathCast Official. You can find me on most of those platforms under any one of those monikers. However, if you want to interact with me, the best place to go is to TikTok, where I am on under DeathCast Official. If you'd like to support the show, there's a couple of ways that you can do this. First and foremost, you can go to your favorite podcast app, subscribe to the show, and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy it. You can also go to buymeacoffee.com/thedeathcast, where you can make a one-time donation. And lastly, if you would like to really help the show out, you can go to tinyurl.com/DCPatreon, where for as little as $1.99 a month, you can get access to early ad-free shows and exclusive content. And as always, I must shout out my very first Patreon members, Channel and Anthony. As always, thank you guys so much for the support. All right, now that all of that is out of the way, find yourself a nice comfy chair, kick back, relax. I've got my coffee, I've got my cigarettes. Let's go into the crypt. So this time through, we're going to be looking at the crimes of Leonard Lake and Charles Ng. If you are unfamiliar with these two individuals, they were a pair of serial killers, really sadistic animals, who murdered families, took the women as captive, where they were held as sex slaves until they decided to murder the women. With that said, there is a content warning for this series because these two men were some of the worst of the worst. It's unknown how many victims they actually had as they attempted to hide their misdeeds, and Leonard Lake killed himself while in police custody so A, he would not have to answer any questions or be held accountable for his reprehensible actions. As always, with a undertaking like this, I like to start at the beginning by going over who the perpetrators are, or in the case of Leonard Lake, were, what their early life was like, their upbringing, that type of thing. On October 29th, 1945, Leonard Thomas Lake was born to a former U.S. sailor, a 21-year-old Elgin Lake, and his wife, Gloria. It's known that the Lake family had a lot of marital discord going on, and that Elgin Lake took solace in alcohol. It is unknown, however, whether or not he was a physically or verbally abusive individual towards his wife and, at that time, child. In 1950, the Lake family had a new addition in the form of a daughter named Sylvia. And in 1951, their third child, Donald, was born. Not long after Donald was born, when Leonard Lake was 6 years old, Elgin Lake decided that he no longer wanted to participate in familial life and promptly left his wife and children, heading to Seattle, Washington. And here's where things really start to get weird. Gloria Lake stayed with her children in various housing projects throughout San Francisco for a few months, working various odd jobs before deciding that it just was not worth it to her any longer. Taking Sylvia and Donald, Gloria absconded to Seattle to be with her husband, ostensibly to try and rekindle the relationship with Elgin. Now, according to Sylvia in later interviews, she has stated that years later she was told that the separation between her older brother and her mother was quite a horrific and traumatic experience. Again, this is according to Sylvia. There are various different stories out there, however, we do have to take his sister's word at it. Gloria initially asked Leonard whether he wanted to stay in kindergarten and go live with his grandparents, or if he wanted to come with her, and Leonard, who was considered a fairly bright child, decided he wanted to stay with his grandparents. However, on the day that Gloria and the other two siblings were set to leave, Leonard decided that he, in fact, wanted to go with his mother, at which point he promptly and understandably flew into hysterics over his mother abandoning him. However, Gloria was unable to take him, as she had only paid for room enough for her and the two other siblings, and Leonard Lake had to go live with his grandparents. This very well could be the event that planted the seed in Leonard's mind for the coming deviance. We really can't say with certainty, although we can say that he felt great resentment towards women and also towards his siblings. Leonard living with his grandparents, he develops an affinity for photography. Lake's mother eventually does return to the San Francisco area. Lake, however, stays with his mother. And there's a couple of interesting and disturbing things that occur starting from roughly the time that he was six. Now, living with his grandparents, Leonard had a steady home, clothing, even allowance. His grandparents would send him to summer camp, which Lake later recounted is where he got his love for living in the outdoors. It's known also, though, that while living with his grandparents, Lake began having an interest in pornography. It's known that in 1956, Leonard's mother remarried and had two additional daughters, and that Leonard refused to rejoin his mother. It is also known that Leonard began taking pornographic pictures of his sister Sylvia. Now, some sources dispute this, but the majority of them state this as fact, and that eventually he began using these pictures to blackmail his sister into performing sexual acts with him. So already we see that Leonard Lake simply views women as objects to be used. Further, he began experimenting with a chemistry set that his grandparents bought for him, and according to a cousin of his who was 8 years younger than him, Leonard would experiment with various chemicals, at one point setting part of his bedroom on fire, which they were able to extinguish. He also enjoyed building little cities for a mouse collection that he had started. Blake began with only 2 mice, and they very quickly multiplied. And again, according to this cousin, Lake eventually decided that he needed to get rid of these mice, and after giving some of them away, decided to kill the majority of them by various means, before attempting to get rid of the bodies using acid from the chemistry set to dissolve them. As I said, we can already see there's really deviant behavior going on with Leonard Lake. Lake's half-sister, Janet Leonard, stated about the family dynamic that while Lake was cordial to her and the other sisters, he was outright cold to his brother Donald, who at the age of 9 had been struck by a truck and suffered some pretty serious head injuries, brain damage, that type of thing. And again, this is according to his half-sister. Leonard began talking about how people who were on welfare and who had mental problems were a burden on the system and should be cleansed from the earth. Along with these worldviews, Lake began heavily fantasizing about a story called The Collector by John Fowles. Now, in this book, an individual takes a woman captive where he keeps her in a hidden cell and forces himself upon her sexually whenever he wants. The idea of this began to appeal to Leonard Lake more and more. And this is an ideology that's going to stay with Leonard for the remainder of his life. On January 27th, 1964, Leonard Lake officially enlists in the U.S. Marines. A lot of the things that Lake later did, he took not only his own fairly high IQ, but also from things that he learned while he was in the military. It's known that anything that he did was referred to as an operation or ops, and this includes the horrific crimes that he and Charles are later going to commit. He ends up becoming a radar technician and gets stationed at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. At a family get-together in South Carolina in April of 1965, he meets a young woman by the name of Karen Lee Meinzerman. Karen had traveled from Delaware to attend college. Because of this meeting, they end up corresponding with one another via the mail. It's known that not long before Christmas of 1965, Lake ends up being sent to Vietnam, where the war is now escalating. And Karen didn't hear from him again until after Lake had returned stateside and was stationed in California, at which point he began writing to Karen again. This was in 1968. In 1969, Lake ends up traveling to Delaware, where he convinces Karen of he loves her, and they decide to get married, with Karen returning to California with Lake, and they are married in March of 1969. Again, this is according to Karen. At first, the marriage was good, although she noticed behavior patterns that were somewhat troubling to her. Leonard would often joke with his fellow Marines about selling her to them. He also repeatedly demanded that she dress in a provocative manner. He also became extremely controlling of his new bride. She later stated that living with Leonard Lake meant that he was the master and she the slave. During 1970, Leonard Lake volunteered for a second tour in Vietnam. His wife Karen went to live with his grandparents, and it should be noted that Leonard came back telling fantastical stories about killing many people while he was over there. The reality is he was stationed in Da Nang as a radar technician and thus saw no action. The other reality is that Lake frequented prostitutes while he was in Da Nang, and if you've ever read up on the subject, the GIs over there were pretty inhumane towards these young women, most of whom were forced into these situations. So again, we have a situation much like with his sister Sylvia, where Lake is able to take advantage of women who are weaker than he is in order to gain his own sexual gratification. It is unknown whether or not Lake murdered any of these women, but given what we know about him, it's highly doubtful, although I can almost say with certainty that he was probably one of the worst offenders in the abuse of these girls. Says Lake's over there doing all these various things, he also begins to believe that Karen is cheating on him while he's stationed overseas. Part of this is understandable to a certain degree because other individuals that he knew were receiving letters from their spouses and significant others letting them know that the relationship was over. Lake ends up going and seeing a mental health expert while he's in the Marines, and it's diagnosed that he has, quote, impending schizophrenia and hysterical neurosis. Lake ends up being sent back to California, where he is diagnosed as being a danger to himself and to others. According to his first wife, while he's in the psych ward one night, Lake decides to steal government property. So he goes to a storage facility and is unable to find what it is he's looking for. Lake told Karen that the reason he had to call off the quote-unquote operation was because he suddenly was struck with diarrhea, and upon returning to his room, decided to consume all of the chocolate he had on hand, as, quote, chocolate caused constipation, and if he was constipated, he could therefore go out and resume this operation. It's pretty evident that Lake is completely losing touch with reality at this point in time. Lake ends up getting a battery of psychological testing done, which results in him being discharged from the Marines in January 1971 for medical reasons. Now, the couple ends up buying a home in San Jose, California, and the two of them enroll at West Valley Junior College, with Lake working temporary jobs to pay the bills as they went. This eventually leads to Lake suggesting to his wife that she begin dancing at topless joints to earn extra money. As we see so often in these types of cases, while the victim is initially resistant to the idea, eventually the perpetrator is able to wear away at their defenses, and Karen agrees to this. While Lake stopped working completely, so Karen's working in 40-45 hours a week, Leonard's at home doing absolutely nothing, and very quickly, he begins to reassert control over his young wife by giving what he dubbed controlled beatings, which she described as Lake first, lightly slapping her in the face before later using his fist on her and asking Karen whether or not she enjoyed the punishment before he would consummate the act of a sexual encounter with his wife. So we already have an individual who has little to no regard for other human beings, specifically women. He has forced his wife into dancing topless. He is now physically and mentally abusing her, and he is going to continue this pattern of behavior by forcing Karen to pose for nude photographs for him. And she would later recount that during sexual encounters with her husband, he would inform her of his desire to meet other couples and swap partners. Again, this is not unheard of for an individual like Leonard Lake. He's attempting to strip away any sort of resistance his wife might have to his increasingly bizarre demands and reduce her to nothing more than an object whose sole purpose in life is to please him. Karen later stated that while Lake did pursue this idea of spousal swapping, the couple had only ever engaged in it one time. It's an interesting side note that during all the time that they had been married, Lake would not allow a telephone to be installed into their house, but eventually, during this period of time where he's demeaning his wife as nothing more than an object, he finally relents, but instead of giving the telephone company his real name, uses a phony name, which he claimed would filter out spam and nuisance callers. He also forced his wife to read the book The Collector and really began amassing a small arsenal of weapons. All of this behavior really began to trouble Karen greatly as 1971 turned into 1972. She also discovered a collection of pictures that Lake had taken of other women whom she knew nothing about, the majority of which were nude and in sexually suggestive poses. In November of 1971, Karen Lake is leaving her job at the club where she's dancing, only to be confronted by her husband, who begins screaming and berating her for various imagined slights, while threatening to throw her out of the house. Karen, who has her own car, drives home, only to discover that her husband has beat her to the punch, arrived at the house, thrown all of her clothing out into the yard, and locked her out. Karen ends up gathering all of her possessions and moving into the family's trailer, which is parked in the front yard. However, the next day after work, she is dismayed to discover that Lake has broken into her car and stolen the majority of her possessions. Unable to do anything about it, Karen continues to live in the trailer until her next paycheck, when she goes and gets herself an apartment. At which point, Lake begins to stalk her, breaking into the home, burning holes in her clothing, and stealing various possessions. Obviously, this relationship is at an end, and Leonard Lake and Karen divorce in 1972. This piece of information comes from his half-sister Janet, who later stated that the only time she ever saw her older brother cry was when he informed her that Karen had left him. She also stated that it was her belief that Leonard fully began to hate women at this point. My opinion, however, is just based on the history we have of him up to this point, that hatred was already there, and that Karen rightfully leaving this nut job only further reinforced his belief that women only had one purpose in life. From this point on, Leonard's life is pretty much aimlessly drifting, living with relatives as he could no longer afford the house that he and Karen had shared, working odd jobs, as well as placing personal ads in newspapers. He ends up meeting a young woman by the name of Jennifer Gordon in the later part of 1972, and because of his charismatic personality, she ends up falling for Lake. And she stated that Lake had a propensity for bondage and control during their relationship. Lake ends up convincing Jennifer that the best way that she can help the two of them out is to begin prostituting herself. And the way he would do this is take pictures of his girlfriend nude and in suggestive poses, and then show these pictures to prospective clients. Jennifer, in turn, ends up bringing some of her female acquaintances in who also pose for Lake. Jennifer stated that while all of this seemed par for the course, it was the fact that Lake began taking pictures of her while she was sleeping naked and showing them to her that really started setting off red flags in her mind. Eventually, this is going to accumulate with Lake becoming irate with Jennifer as she decides that she is no longer going to work as a prostitute, and he begins telling her about snuff films. Now, for those who are unaware, for many, 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 many years, law enforcement denied the existence of such films. However, within the last decade, voluminous pieces of evidence have come forward to verify their existence. Basically, a snuff film is a film where a sexual encounter is taped. More often than not, it's a gang rape, and the young woman who is the target of the perpetrators is murdered during the act. Jennifer later stated that to Lake, a snuff film would be the ultimate high to create. He also informed her that should he ever be arrested for anything, he would never make it to trial, as he'd had a tooth in his mouth hollowed out and filled with cyanide, much in the same way that certain high-ranking Nazis had done at the conclusion of World War II. In June 1973, Jennifer ends up moving out of the apartment she is sharing with Lake as he became violent with her the previous evening. According to her, he hit her, knocked her to the floor, and held her down with his foot upon her throat. Now we're going to look at Leonard Lake's psychology for a moment because it helps us to understand what comes next. We already know that by this point, he regards women as objects and that his plan is to find a young woman and hold her captive as his sex slave. The other aspect of Leonard Lake's psychological makeup is that he began to become paranoid about an impending nuclear disaster. Hence his propensity to collect large amounts of weaponry. If you've watched any sort of television in the last 30 years, you've seen reports on individuals with this type of mindset, the survivalist type, who want to break away from society and live off the grid where they can do as they please, stockpile food and weapons, build a bunker, and basically prepare themselves for the downfall of society, wherein they will be the apex predator because they are already prepared. Leonard Lake decides, after the disillusion of his relationship with Jennifer, that he needs to set this plan in motion. not only does he need to go the whole survivalist route, but he also needs to take steps to ensure that his other fantasy becomes a reality, i.e. living out the things that are described in the book The Collector. With all of this in mind, Lake leaves San Francisco and travels roughly 130 miles north to Mendocino County, where he settles in Ukiah. For those unfamiliar with the state of California, once you get above San Francisco into the northern part of the state, it becomes extremely rural and scantily populated. I lived there for roughly 7 years in Tehama County, and to say that there is really nothing up there is an understatement. You have small towns, an occasional city that by most of the rest of the country's standards would not qualify as city, followed by vast stretches of fields, mountains, and wilderness. And that's why a lot of cases such as this one come from that part of the state, because they are so remote and so far removed from the rest of society, these perpetrators are able to hide out and act with an almost unheard of impunity. While he's there in Ukiah, Lake ends up getting a job working for a government firm that overhauls public housing. Eventually, he's able to rise up to the role of crew leader. He also enrolls in Mendocino Community College, from which he learned basically how to be a butcher. Lake ends up also getting a part-time job at the college, tutoring individuals in the class in survivalist skills. And it's through all of this that Leonard Lake is going to find the place wherein he can live out his fantasies. In 1970, a group of hippies had left the San Francisco Bay Area and gone north looking for an area where they could live as they wished. And they end up buying a 5,000 acre plot of land, which they rename The Ranch, which becomes a commune. At first, there were 200 families living on the property, each of them purchasing a parcel of land from the group that had purchased the original parcel. There were no public utilities. Homes were run on hydro or wind-generated power sources. Basically, they just wanted to live off the grid, do their jobs out in society, and come home and live life the way they believed it was intended to be lived. Many of them took on unique monitors like otter or running deer or morning glory, basically living out the bohemian hippie lifestyle. One of these individuals was a young woman in her 30s who had been involved in the various movements of the 1960s and purchased a plot of land in 1970. The woman was working as an occupational therapist during this period of time, splitting her time between living in the city of Ukiah and going out to the ranch to continue building her home. Entered Leonard Lake. Now, this young woman was not a person of means, obviously. She had been able to build a small log cabin, but had dreams of expanding it and really turning the land into something that she can be proud of. Lake, whom she met at a festival, offers to be the solution to all of her needs, letting her know he can do all of these things, she just needs to let him live in the cabin. So he moves into this cabin, ostensibly for a 6-month period, during which he would live rent-free and work on improving the cabin as well as installing an orchard. Obviously, Lake ends up convincing this woman that they should be more than just friends, and they begin an intimate relationship. And it's not long after this happens that Lake starts showing her his photo albums, which are filled with images of naked or near-naked young women in various poses. Obviously, Lake is doing this in an effort to break down her resistance to posing for similar photographs. As we've seen, this is Lake's MO. He charms and coerces the women in his life into falling for him, begins an intimate relationship, and then very slowly, he starts working on their psyche in an effort to break their will to him so that he can do with them whatever it is he pleases. All of which she is resistant to. As their relationship progresses, Lake begins telling her more and more about himself, specifically of his childhood, really laying it on thick, you know, to get this woman's sympathy, while espousing his various beliefs to her, his hatred for individuals who are on welfare, such as his brother Donald, whom at one point he stated that he dreamt of killing. She starts seeing a lot of red flags, but does nothing to stop any of it. At the ranch, there were no guns or other weaponry around, nor were there any sort of drugs around on the property. She learns that Lake has numerous weapons and suspects him of growing marijuana. But again, because of the way that Lake operates, she doesn't resist any of these things or demand that he leave her property, knowing now that he has these things, because he is very good at controlling and manipulating naive individuals. Then she learns of his sadistic side. A friend of Lake's from the days he had been married to Karen, by the name of Charlie, shows up at the property. And Charlie is a rather gregarious, overweight individual. Lake ends up basically forcing the man to lose weight by making him go out and hike on the property in areas that are described as nearly torturous and or dangerous for even an individual who is in good physical health. This doesn't last very long, as this type of treatment angers the man, and he and his wife eventually leave, heading back to their home in Morgan Hill, another area in California that I lived in, which is an extremely affluent town just south of San Jose and north of Gilroy. After Charlie leaves, Lake really begins to exert his control over the woman whose home he's staying in, criticizing everything that she does, lambasting her, humiliating her, and alienating the various neighbors who live nearby. This results in the woman eventually, Lake assaults her by shoving her off of a ladder, and knowing that it's just going to get worse from here, she accepts it when Lake offers to buy the property from her. And from this point on, Lake really goes out of his way to alienate the individuals living around him, firing off guns despite the fact that there is a strict prohibition of not only weapons being on the land, but also of using them, telling various stories about all of the people he killed when he was in Vietnam, bringing in large pieces of construction equipment to reshape the land around his cabin. One individual was a single mother who lived nearby, whom Lake would frequently visit. obviously, Lake is trying to convince this woman to have a relationship with her, which she is not interested in. Again, he's already alienating everyone in the area. Then he starts to talk about his photographs, which the woman is not interested in, and really the final straw comes for her when Lake suggests that she allow him to take photographs of her daughter, who's 10 years old, nude or semi-nude. Lake also began alluding to a project that he nicknamed Operation Miranda, which to those who encountered him and heard him mention the phrase seemed to simply be a, you know, survivalist mentality of building a bunker and hiding out in the inevitable downfall of society, but which had a much darker meaning. As I discussed, he was really into the ideas contained in the book The Collector, and those ideas formed the basis for what came to be known later on in a fully fleshed out form as Operation Miranda, which was to build a secret room inside of his bunker that Lake slowly began to construct, wherein he could hold a woman captive in order to force himself on her sexually. None of the individuals living at the ranch had any idea of it at this point. They really just felt that they had an absolutely obnoxious and overbearing neighbor who basically flaunted the bylaws and rules of the commune in everyone's face and did whatever it was that he wanted whenever he wanted without regard to anyone else's rights or property. Lake was known to cut through others' property to get his own and to act menacingly towards those around his property whom he thought of infringing on his rights. As for the building of the bunker, the way Lake went about it was simply this. Discussed that he was working for a public housing organization and was working as a crew chief. While Lake worked there when they had projects, he would over-order various supplies, which he would then take off-site and deliver to his property so that he could begin the construction of the bunker that was to house Operation Miranda. A lot of this information that we have concerning this comes from an individual who worked under Leonard Lake, who was struggling to get by and whom Lake offered the use of a small one-room cabin that he had built on the property. And in exchange for this, this individual would help Lake with the construction of the bunker. As with many others, this individual stated that Lake had a near obsession with weaponry, talk of survivalism, his hatred for both his mother and his brother Donald, and in showing off his collection of photographs. And this particular individual stated that he found it extremely disturbing that many of the photographs that Leonard Lake had were not of women who were of legal age to consent, but were in fact images of young girls, mostly early to mid-teens, but I have read certain things that indicate that some of these photographs may have been of much younger children. Something that is going to repeatedly come up over and over again during the course of the next decade. Some people have disputed this idea. I believe Leonard Lake was more likely than not a pedophile. This stems from his treatment of his sister when they were when he was living with his grandparents, the sexual abuse that he subjected her to, and his continued attempts to get much younger girls to pose nude for him. And I also believe that the reason he didn't fully act out on this once he gets a partner in crime is because he believed his partner would not be open or willing to participate in that type of actions with very young children. One of the reasons that I state this is it's known that Lake wanted to hold and condition a woman to be a slave to him, and in writings and conversations he had with people when he was not guarded, he stated that the best way to do this was to get them as young as possible in order that they are, you know, fully broken to his will by the time that they hit sexual maturity. A story that has come out from this period of time concerning this individual that was living on the property with Lake is that he brought his girlfriend, who was an 18-year-old young woman, up to the property, and she eventually brings a friend of hers up there, and immediately Lake begins to work on this woman before eventually propositioning her that a friend of his by the name of Charlie was in dear need of intimate relations with a young woman, and that should she consent to this, Lake would pay her $100. He also attempted to get this young woman to pose nude for him, which she steadfastly refused. Although, because of Lake's manipulations, she is going eventually to acquiesce to his demands and begin a sexual relationship with him, as is his tenant's girlfriend. And not long after these sexual encounters, Lake begins a relationship with an individual living on the ranch by the name of Timothy Zell, who went by the name at that point of Otter Zell. Otter lived on the property with his partner, a woman by the name of Morning Glory. No, I'm not making any of this up. Both of them actually have Wikipedia pages, and Otter, in fact, has a website. Otter is a rather different individual. He describes himself as a neo-pagan writer, speaker, and religious leader who is also the co-founder of the Church of All Worlds, who, according to their Wikipedia page, quote, is a neo-pagan religious group whose stated mission is to evolve a network of information, mythology, and experience that provides a context and stimulus for reawakening Gaia and reuniting her children through tribal community dedicated to responsible stewardship and evolving consciousness. It is based in Coatia, California. So we have this individual, Otter, who, if you look for him online under the name of Otter Zell, that's Z-E-L-L, will come up as Oberon Zell Ravenheart, was a really interesting individual. He had developed a process for creating what he called uniforms, wherein he would take a male goat who just after birth and perform some form of a surgical experiment on them so that when the animal began to grow, it would grow a single horn. One of these was a white goat that he named Sir Lancelot. Upon learning about this animal, Leonard Lake very quickly sees the potential of this animal, not as, you know, a sideshow freak, but as a means for him to encounter young girls. So he suggests to Zell that they take the animal to local festivals where they can show it off for a price and split the profits, with Lake taking photographs of the individuals who stopped by the booth to see the animal, which they could then sell to the customers. So the two of them began doing this off and on throughout the years. Lake is still manipulating the various women coming in and out of his life at this point, living on the ranch, and this brings us to 1979, where he encounters a young girl by the name of Cindy Morgan, who is 16 years old. Lake ends up convincing the girl's mother that it would be a good idea if she were to bring her daughter out to the ranch so that Lake could photograph her further with the goat. So they end up out at his residence on the ranch, and Cindy later recounted that during the photo session, she got the very strong sense that Lake wanted to get her separate from her mother for a few moments. And this was confirmed when Lake ends up cornering her away from her mother and asking Cindy if she wants to pose for some other types of photographs for him. Cindy declines, although, again, according to her later recollection, she found the idea that this older man was thinking of her in that way as somewhat romantic. A few weeks later, he contacts Cindy and informs her that there's a medieval festival going on and would she like to accompany him. She informs him that her parents will not let her go. Lake, however, is not deterred. After a brief trip to Los Angeles, of which we know very little, Cindy states that she began seeing Leonard Lake all over Ukiah, really anywhere that she was hanging out. Obviously, in hindsight, we know that Leonard Lake is going to begin grooming this young woman. And yes, that is exactly what this is. We have a 33-year-old man who has taken a sexual interest in a 16-year-old. And unfortunately, this is not uncommon for individuals who are in the types of things that Leonard Lake is into. And I'm not just talking about the need and desire to keep a sex slave. I'm talking individuals within this outsider survivalist community. Not all of them, but there are a good number of them who have this idea that it is their right and should be legal for 15, 16-year-old girls to enter into a relationship with them. These are also the same types of individuals who believe that the women in these relationships should be fully subservient to their men, which we know already Leonard Lake was of the mindset. Eventually, though, Lake, who by this point knows where Cindy lives, ends up persuading her to come out to his property and pose nude for him. Obviously, Cindy's parents have no idea that this is going on, and she would later say that during the entire course of the photo shoot, Lake constantly berated her about the evils of premarital sex, informing her that she should remain a virgin. After this, Cindy never again hears from Leonard Lake, and some have speculated that a part of him felt guilty for taking advantage of this young girl, while others have stated that more likely than not, Lake had progressed in a relationship he had begun a few years earlier with another teenager who lived nearby, and that as this relationship with this young girl became more of a likelihood, Leonard Lake simply cut his losses against the resistant Cindy and turned his attention to her instead. It's a young woman by the name of Darlene. Like I said, they lived on the ranch. She had encountered Lake during a rainstorm when he stopped at their home and informed them that the roads were too treacherous for him to be able to get up to his property, and asked permission to park his truck there so that he could take the motorcycle, which was in the bed of the truck, up to the house, stating that he could go places on the motorcycle to avoid the large ruts and runoff on the road that he could not take the truck. The family readily agreed to this. It's at this point that Lake began eyeing the 13-year-old girl. After this chance encounter, or perhaps not so chance, we know that Lake kept his eyes out for young girls. Lake began showing up at the Davis's home more and more often, volunteering to help them with various tasks on their property. Initially, Lake begins spending time alone with Darlene. And eventually, Lake is able to persuade Darlene to drive to Morgan Hill with him to visit Charlie. Darlene is very naive at this point, 13, 14 years old. She doesn't understand what is happening to her, nor do her parents see any harm in this association. While at the home of Charlie, she ends up seeing photographs of young women posed nude inside of a photo album, which both of the men treat as nothing more than artistic merit. Now, just before she turns 16 years old, Darlene goes up to Lake's home and has her first sexual encounter, which she insists was consensual as she was madly in love with Leonard Lake. This, too, is very common among individuals that abuse children. They build a bond with their intended victim, and because the child is so young, they don't understand their feelings and their emotions, they begin to feel that they are in love with this individual, which eventually culminates in a sexual encounter between them. Unlike many of these instances, however, Darlene and Lake continue their relationship secretly away from any others, and Lake begins to put the idea to her of bringing other partners, specifically women, into their bed. An idea that Darlene was not interested in. She does, however, consent to Lake's request that she pose for photographs for him. And as with others, Lake starts filling her in on all of his various demented philosophical ideas. Eventually, Darlene's parents are going to figure out exactly what's going on between the two of them. And in 1980, after Lake proposes that the two of them get married, Darlene's parents end up sending her away from a boarding school because they know that no good can come of this relationship, and obviously they find it disgusting that this man is in a relationship with their daughter. That, however, does not stop Leonard Lake. He continues on with his various ideas and interests, eventually meeting a young woman by the nickname of Cricket, who is going to become his second wife, and he meets this young woman by the use of the quote-unquote unicorn of Otter Zell. And it's through all of this that eventually he is going to end up meeting his partner in crime, Charles Noon. But we are going to get into all of that in the next episode. At this point, we are going to stop our discussion. I hope that you have enjoyed this first part look into the crimes of Lake and Noon. And I look forward to any feedback that you might have on it. Until next time, the Deathcast is a co-production of Corpse Creek Publishing in association with Big Pond Podcasts. Stay morbid!